You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 10th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Daryl Issa scavenger hunt, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Okay, so I need to find a bottle top and a murder warrant and a Kenyan birth certificate, and then I'm done. Oh, Fast and Furious. What?
Yeah, you're taking attention away from important things like Acorn and the new Black Panther party.
Yes, right.
Pigford. Remember last week was everyone blogged impotently about Pigford Day.
Yeah, that was good.
That felt
really good, too.
Andrew Breitbart really is missing. You can sense his absence from the proceedings.
Because he would get them to focus people.
Focus on what's important.
The dick picture on my cell phone.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. First of all, happy Mother's Day upcoming.
Oh, thank you. And happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there and aunts and sisters and everybody who, all the women out there who take care of kids.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of them.
Thanks.
And it takes a village. Yeah,
it does. It takes a very, very large global village.
Yes, it does.
So good job, women of the world. He said mansplaining it to us. Way to go, ladies.
Thank you for mansplaining motherhood to us.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what I'm here for, Blue Gal. And secondly, I take Mr. Issa very seriously.
Oh, yeah. He's the richest man in Congress. By the way,
I also he got his fortune as a car thief, not as a car thief, but he started off life as a car thief.
Sort of.
And then his scaring people into buying his auto alarms. Mm-hmm. They have really gotten the band back together again. Mm-hmm. This is 1994.
Yep.
And we come up against the inherent problem when it comes to debating with people who have no recollection of what the fuck happened last week.
Yeah.
Is they have no memory that this is exactly how the Clintons were shredded by this combination of.
Well, that's the goal right now with Benghazi.
Yeah. Well, Benghazi.
Shred the Clintons. Yeah.
Benghazi. And then they'll find other things to throw. I mean, they've been throwing everything they could from birth certificates to death panels. And now it's Benghazi. And that'll be something else. From the documentary Power of Nightmares, you might remember. Mm-hmm. The people who were doing this to the Clintons, who had flipped and were being interviewed, said, yeah, this was political terrorism.
Yeah.
We knew we were lying. We were taking money from crackpot right-wing billionaires to lie. And then the Congress would take our headlines and treat them as evidence and start holding hearings.
Mm-hmm.
We knew it was terrorism. We knew we were lying. And we didn't care because it was effective. It crippled the Clinton administration. And that is exactly what they're doing now. And it is pointless to recount to either conservatives or centrists the litany of hearings that never happened during the Bush administration. It is pointless to ask them, where the fuck was your outrage? Because you're asking pigs to behave like human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm done with that. There is no outrage left. There's no conscience left. They don't have those things in stock on the right. They just have must destroy the Negro in the White House, must destroy the liberals. And any means
and
to that end
team
is perfectly
sport.
Acceptable.
It reminds me a lot of the sport of avoiding taxes.
Yes. Yeah.
In the sense that it's an end in itself. Being on this team and destroying the enemy is just an end in itself. Doesn't matter how much money you have already. If you can save that nickel from the tax man, you're going to do it. And if you can score 1 point against the other side, the Democrats.
The bad guys.
The bad guys.
The imaginary bad guys.
That's it. That's your only goal is that today I will score 1 point on Twitchy.
Yes.
You know, I'll get a comment from Michelle Malkin, and that's it. That's the goal.
There is no governing
There's no game plan.
There's no policy. Yes. There's nothing. It's
no plan.
It's we have identified, you know, we had the commies in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We had the Clintons during the 90s. We have Muslim terrorists, Islamic terrorists. We have this series of enemies that the right has to have mm-hmm. in order to exist. They are the shadow cast by other things, and they cannot exist without someone to hate. They have to have it. And when they don't actually have a real enemy that's really formidable, that really actually is doing bad things, they make one up. And but it's always class, the same people.
You know what would happen if Democrats investigated Lindsey Graham, like Daryl Issa is investigating Benghazi?
Oh, the first thing we would do is go through his emails and his garbage, and we would start discovering how many men he slept with over the years.
Well, I was just going to say, I think Fox would immediately have on wall-to-wall John Bolton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Oliver North. You know, it's the John Bolton, Oliver North full employment project over at Fox.
Yeah.
Apparently, they cut to Bolton and Oliver North anytime a Democrat spoke at that hearing.
Yeah. Well,
they just said, well, you know, while they're talking, we're going to talk to John Bolton about security and how bad the UN is. This is a UN conspiracy, isn't it, John Bolton?
Well, yes, Ollie North, it is. Ollie North, noted war criminal and traitor, North, who is a Fox News employee.
Convicted, yeah.
Convicted, and whatever happened with that whole thing, that whole Iran-Contra thing? Oh, that's right. Pardons all around by George H.W. Bush, the good Bush.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, as he left the office. Yeah. Make sure all the criminals can go free. So
we have exciting news, though, Driftglass.
Yes. Tell me.
Now that Mark Sanford is in the House of Representatives, they can really repeal Obamacare.
Yeah. They get that one more vote they needed. And this is like is this the 40th vote they're going to cast today or yesterday?
Something like that, yeah.
Inside that universe, everything they're doing makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Outside, it is nothing but the psychotic scribbling on the padded room wall with your own shit ravings of the dregs of our culture. And there's no way for those two groups to talk to each other because they don't acknowledge that they're doing anything wrong. And if you ever catch them in the middle of doing something wrong, the first words out of their mouth will be, yeah, but the liberals. So,
well, I want to read to you the best piece of writing I read all week. It's
please.
One sentence long, which is James Schlarman at Political Garbage Chute and his response to the Mark Sanford winning the election in South Carolina. He said, "The part of my brain that follows politics just barfed so hard into its soul that it shat out its heart through its ball."
Yeah.
Very good. That's a don't sugarcoat it winner of the week right there. And everyone I know just said, oh, well, South Carolina.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. We are two countries.
They're two completely different countries, and we would really like it if they would quit fucking our part of it up, but they won't do it. So,
and let's face it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed with the number of comments I saw that said nobody gives a shit who he sleeps with.
Yeah.
But he did leave office and he didn't even tell the lieutenant governor of his state where he was going for almost 2 weeks.
Yes. Which
and
is different.
You wouldn't rehire somebody who did that to you.
Uh-uh.
But the people of South Carolina did.
No. No,
so
you wouldn't rehire someone like that, and you certainly wouldn't rehire someone like that who'd been driving around with a giant cross on the back of their car, proclaiming themselves to be a family values conservative entire fucking life.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It is, and that, again, you can take that and tattoo it on a frying pan and slam it right upside a conservative's head, and it won't faze them because they are forgiven. It doesn't count when you're a conservative. It doesn't count when you're a Republican.
Well, I think it doesn't count when you're a conservative and male and white.
Yeah.
And Baptist.
And anyway, Acorn.
You have to have all four of those things. Because I don't think a woman candidate would have gotten away with that at all. Even a Republican woman. If she disappeared and was having an affair in some South American country with somebody, some married man she met on the internet, and she disappeared from the governor's office. I mean, I don't want to give anybody a visual.
No.
But if Jan, the governor of Arizona...
Jan Brewer had disappeared. To court a pool boy.
To have an affair with some Cuban pool boy.
Uh-huh.
And the lieutenant governor of Arizona didn't know where she was for 10 days.
Yeah.
Her career would be over.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
I watched.
Elected to the House.
This week, I watched on Meet the Press and all the shitty shows on the Sunday, the Mouse Circus. I saw them roll out Jim DeMint.
Yeah.
And Cokie Roberts and Harold Ford Jr. and Newt fucking Gingrich and Rich fucking Lowry. And there is no bottom that you can hit beyond which.
And Jim DeMint is now getting paid to lie about immigration reform.
Yes, he
and
is.
And just release studies.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's a study from the Heritage Foundation about how much immigration reform is going to cost. And everyone has looked at it who has a calculator in their hand and said, no, these numbers are wrong. They don't add up. This makes no sense.
But it's a study. You can take the biggest dump you want between two glossy covers. And it's not a study, Jim. It's a lie. And at some level, he knows it's a lie because
but it doesn't matter because we have to cover both sides. You
right.
know? So there's this study. Some people say.
Well, and he was on Meet the Press. I believe it was Meet the Press or might have been one of the other awful shows. They're sort of all run together in my mind. And he was. I think it was that, and he said, I'm almost verbatim quoting, that you can't trust the CBO because the CBO is the puppet of the Obama administration. The only people who have unbiased, good studies on this matter is the Heritage Foundation. And he lied, and he lied repeatedly. He lied from a lot of different angles. And, of course, David Gregory, being David Gregory, never challenged him on it, never pushed back on it. He just sat there and took it because his job is to give workmanlike hand jobs to all the wing nuts in exchange for the dues to his country club. That's his job.
Yeah.
And if you expect anything more from goons and paid off whores like David Gregory, you will always be disappointed. That's why I think Jan Brewer would be reelected. There really isn't. And this is the party of Louis Gohmert. This is the party that reelected Michelle Bachmann. Yes, by a small margin, but they still fucking reelected an empty headed blow up doll over anybody. And they just reelected a disgraced adulterer, Christian forgiven former governor who broke into his wife's house and blah, 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 because he wasn't a liberal. These people are beyond fucking redemption. And trying to convince them and persuade them and talk to them and lure them over to your cause is a waste of your fucking time. What you can do, the only thing you can do is we always recommend, work at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
Work to make sure your neighbors know what real liberals look like, what real liberals do, and how real liberals operate, and heighten that contradiction between what they're hearing on Rush Limbaugh, what they see you doing every day. And secondly, focus on the centrists, because the centrists are at least forced to acknowledge that the right is wrong half the time.
Yes.
Their doctrine requires it. And just keep, wherever you get a chance, just pound the shit out of them. I mean, I'm watching David Brooks tie himself up in knots trying to walk away from all the shit he spent the 90s and the 2000s saying. And the only reason he gets away with it is because there's nobody there to call him on it. If you can be the person that calls them on it, you'll make a difference.
Yep.
Hey, look, who's on TV? Joe Lieberman.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, I just want to thank so much the listeners who sent little gifts to us this week. Mm-hmm. One listener sent us a copy of a Robert Heinlein Juvenalia novel, which... the 14-year-old snatched up immediately and is reading. So once he's done with it, I'm sure we'll get a chance to take a look.
I believe the listener sent along to patch over that spot of ignorance in my memory.
Uh-huh. I think so. So
but
your turn next. But
it was grabbed out of my hands. What can I say?
Junior will explain it to you. He will teen-splain it to you.
He will. Me with eye rolling and, oh.
Don't you understand? Yeah. He is the expert, isn't he?
He really is.
The other thing that someone sent us on topic, a Ned Lamont for Senate t-shirt.
Yeah, bless your heart.
Thank you so much. That was really a lovely surprise. We opened it in the kitchen and went, oh my gosh, look at that.
This smells like 2005.
And I want to thank everyone who has sent us $5 in the past 2 weeks saying, yeah, my tax return came in. Here's $5. We really appreciate that. Thank you.
We do.
Our tax refund got eaten up by car repairs. So
yeah, it evaporated. But it was there. I mean, it was there.
Yeah, thank goodness.
We had it to
get the van fixed. So the
ancient van, which is held together by
juice box wrappers and gum
and liberal bumper stickers.
Oh man. Okay. I want to go back to FreedomWorks. We were talking about Jim DeMint, who has on his Facebook page, you know, all about how much Obamacare is going to cost and how much immigration reform is going to cost and how much, you know, nobody's talking about how much money he's making doing this. But there was a post at Politics USA that our friend Brian wrote us about, talking about FreedomWorks, who is working very hard to get the cable provider Comcast to stop supporting Obama's radical leftist agenda by running MSNBC on their cable channels.
Yeah.
Even though Comcast owns part of NBC, or all of it, or whatever. But, you know, Comcast, they're gonna stage a protest. The Tea Party is going to have a protest against Comcast because they are actively supporting Obama's radical leftist agenda to fundamentally, hey, I bet Newt Gingrich wrote this.
Fundamentally, basically.
Fundamentally transform America.
Yeah.
So Brian wrote in and said that Comcast is also supporting the right wing's extreme agenda by broadcasting Fox News.
Yes.
So where's the outrage at that propaganda network? Oh, wait. Benghazi.
Benghazi. That's right. Let's not forget Benghazi.
Never mind. No. Can we talk just for a second about the girls in Cleveland who were rescued and rescued themselves? And I'm so pleased and happy that they're still alive. And, I'm upset about the media circus that surrounds them. Very, very glad that Chris Hayes had a wonderful two segments on Wednesday night about connecting all of this to violence against women, domestic violence, and et cetera, and really brought in lots and lots of context, which I thought was terrific. Mm-hmm. But this war on women is totally related to what's going on with these girls and how people look the other way and think that it's not happening or are simply, the way I look at it, it appears as though in this neighborhood, they were not the only abused women. I mean, the hero who helped this girl out had been arrested and convicted of domestic violence. And the police seemed to be quite overwhelmed with the number of calls to the point where the community didn't trust the police. The police saw the community as a burden, et cetera. And there's just so much healing to do in these situations that we don't remember how hard it is to just survive day to day in some of these neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And I really want to point that out and pray for those people. And
in case you would like a glimpse of what the norm used to be, Adam 12 and Dragnet are available on your nostalgia station. And just I was flipping by one yesterday and saw the woman with the cut face and the husband with the blood in his shirt and the cops just trying to get him to talk it out so they could leave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was played for, a little bit of high comedy.
Yep.
But it was not played as if this is a situation where one of the people's lives are in danger.
Right.
And it's not the cop's job to intervene or get her out of there or put him in jail.
Nope.
It's their job to cool them off and get them talking, to be centrist. I'm sure both sides here. I'm sure both sides were to fault somehow.
I'm sure she sort of asked for it, right?
Well, like as we say around our house, honey, marriages don't fail.
Wives fail.
Wives fail. That's right. Conservatism cannot fail, honey. Conservatives only be failed.
Failed. Got it.
And other aphorisms.
Other things like that.
That should never be repeated in polite company. I don't have anything to add to, other than it's an incredibly sad situation, other than it made me think of a Cowboy Junkies song that made me cry every time I hear it. I posted it on my site if you want to go listen to it. It's a wonderful song. It's a song called This Street, That Man, This Life by Cowboy Junkies, and it's really on point. I mean, it's a sad song. It's about missing children, and I heard it first on Homicide, Life on the Streets. It was a terrific show, one of the shows I really never missed. But I can't sing. I can't sing at all. And I can't sing this one for sure. But this street holds its secrets like a cobra holds its kill. And this street minds its business like a jailer minds his jail. Mm-hmm. That house there is haunted. That door's a portal to hell. This street holds its secrets very well. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful song. But be prepared to have Kleenex next to you because it's very sad.
Yep.
And I don't have anything to add. It's just a fucking tragedy. It's just an absolute human tragedy. I have no pity for the people who did it.
Nope. But I had an amusing moment earlier just to lighten up the mood a little bit.
Uh-huh.
It makes me mad and makes me roll my eyes, but on one level it's funny. One of my favorite blogs is RH Reality Check, which is a blog about reproductive health. And they had an article in March by Robin Marty called "They Are Coming for Your Birth Control: Contraception Poisons Love Between a Husband and Wife."
Oh.
And this theologist, as she calls him, Peter Beklinski, who's with this pro-life, anti-birth control website, said, "Contraception turns sex into a big fat lie. It makes the lover say, 'I love you, but not your fertility.'" I don't want that part of you. Lock it up.
Wow.
And I saw the words lock it up, and I just thought of those girls getting, you know, forced abortions and whatever else is going on there and getting impregnated. And I just, it turns your stomach to think about that stuff. But then you see this guy and this war on women thing where women are just property. And, you know, we don't want to poison love between a husband and wife. No one wants to be loved conditionally without their fertility. Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Trust but no me. Thanks.
98% of Catholic couples want to be loved conditionally without their fertility to be being part of the picture.
Well, didn't you? I mean, again, I don't have anything particularly profound to add to a discussion that's just pure tragedy. But didn't you bring up a podcast or two ago a quote? This is where I know we irritate people from time to time, but a quote from the Bible about the woman who was raped. Hmm. And the husbands or brothers who...
Oh, yeah, no, they went in and what was that about? That they wanted him to marry her.
Right. It was,
right? They, that was the whole... That's a common... That even happens today in some cultures, where the way you fix a rape is to get the rapist to marry the woman.
Right. She's property, and she's been damaged.
Happens. Right. She's been damaged. You broke it, you buy it. Yeah. I mean, really, that still goes on in certain...
Absolutely.
Cultures.
And that
unbelievable. But
and
true.
There and obviously there are people for whom that thought is normal.
Yeah. Well, there are people in this country. That's the thing that who call themselves Christian, who think that, you know, it's perfectly. They're so hyped up on the fetus fetish, as I call it. And a lot of people call it, which is the rapist gets visitation rights for the baby that was the result of a rape. And the guy can be in jail for rape, but he gets visitation rights for his quote unquote kid because he's the biological father of that child. There are something like 31 states where that is the case. And it goes right along with the anti-abortion movement. But that's a life. That's a baby. That's a life. We have to just totally deny that the woman has anything to say about it. She is merely a vessel.
Yeah.
Period.
And state after state, abortion is being de facto outlawed.
Yep.
So clinics are being closed by people who are putting in.
And I'm going to use the Newt Gingrich word. Fundamentally, it's fundamentally basically a hatred of women and a belief that women are chattel and property.
Yeah, but that's
and vessels, and
that's
it.
The thing that we sometimes we hear on the left do not fully appreciate.
Yeah. Is
the tenacity with which these people hang on to their Bronze Age ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it ties into just about everything we've talked about today. Mm-hmm. It ties in Mark Sanford, white male patriarchy, you know, not to use a cliche, but this idea that the white man can do whatever he wants because he's the boss and he's in charge. Mm-hmm. And then he asks for forgiveness and we'll just elect him to the House of Representatives because Jesus would want us to forgive the white man.
Mm-hmm. And he can do, even after he's busted, he can treat his wife like shit.
Yeah.
He can just treat her as if she were a paid consultant.
She's crazy. She doesn't want me to watch a football game with my son. I had to sneak in with a flashlight. My cell phone left the flashlight.
Yeah.
No, she has a legal agreement with you. And she is an autonomous person with a house of her own. And you can only go in there when the legal agreement that you signed says so.
But that doesn't count.
No, that's just crazy.
Blah, blah. That's a lot of blah, blah, blah for non-white Christian male conservatives.
Right.
As we learned this week with Jeff Skilling.
Who is buying his way to a shorter sentence. This is the Enron guy.
Yeah. Yep.
As one commenter noted over at Gawker, never steal anything small.
No. Always steal enough money to hire yourself the best fucking lawyer in the world. And then you'll be fine.
And but because he's willing to buy off some of his victims with 0.1% of the amount of money he stole.
Yep.
And he is promising not to sue anybody for putting him in jail, which is astonishing on its own.
Yeah.
The thing is, I can't wait for his Abramoff style apology book tour.
Yeah, I know.
You know, he'll be on Charlie Rose.
Well, of course he will. Enron was one of those things where if this country had any capacity to learn about anything, they yes. would have learned from Enron.
Right.
Because
it was easy enough to understand in a half hour.
It had all the elements. It had they sabotaged the California economy. And then mocked Gray Davis when he said, they sabotaged the California economy. They rolled in Arnold Schwarzenegger as their wind-up governor to run the state for them. They took advantage of their market position to screw people out of their life savings. Mm-hmm. They looted their own company. They made shit up. And Jeff Skilling was at the heart of...
They lied to their own employees who invested their retirement savings in the company that
invested
they were
everything.
Working for.
I don't need a 401k. I don't need a retirement. I have Enron stock.
And I work here, so I know they're the best.
And they're around for life. And meanwhile, the guys at the top were selling short because people have done a lot of writing on this, but they were doing this thing called mark-to-marketing.
Yeah.
Mark-to-market, which is essentially claiming the future value of the thing you just invented as a present asset.
Yeah.
And then selling it to a shell company that's owned by yourself and moving debt around on paper in such a way that it looks like they're making a huge profit. And of course, Wall Street loved them. There were a few writers who were saying there's something stinking here. There's something really bad. This doesn't make any sense. But of course, those people, as they always are, were pushed aside. The people at the top looted the place, made off with billions of dollars. And then the whole thing collapsed. People forget that Ken Lay was George W. Bush's number one contributor.
Oh, yeah.
His nickname was Kenny Boy, I believe.
Yep.
And up until the day that Ken Lay got caught, in which case George Bush never heard of him. And you never heard him talked about in relationship with the Bush family ever again. Ken Lay, like Frankie Five Angels from The Godfather, mysteriously died in prison. And shortly after he went in, and all of the charges, I believe, against his wife were dropped. Like Frankie Five Angels, the families were taken care of. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying it would make a great movie. But Enron was, and Enron has this weird connection to Chicago because Tom Skilling, remember the capo de tutti copy of Weathermen in Chicago, is Jeff Skilling's brother.
Oh wow!
But Jeff Skilling is a criminal, reckless criminal down to his shoe tops, and he looted that place. He and his band of thugs just plundered the place, and one of the little twisty things that I remember seeing. I don't think there's any video of it out there anymore anywhere, but all the people, all the conservative right wing Texan folk, hard working good folk who work for the good Christians who worked for that company and didn't lack welfare, didn't like them welfare cheats, having to go down to the unemployment office and screaming at the case managers there that I pay your salary.
Yeah, yeah.
You find me a job.
Yep.
Like, welcome to the how the rest of the country lives.
Yep. Don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, but I paid all your salaries, and now you have to go find me a job. Well, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. Who were incredibly impatient that the government that they had always treated like shit wasn't there for them.
Right.
But the private corporation that reamed them out, stole their life savings, and left them to die broke and on their own.
Well, Texas is the Ayn Rand heaven. You know, it's where Ayn Rand goes to be, I don't know, the West Texas thing. They had $1 million of insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said, well, you know what that means. That means they're going to get bailed out by the taxpayer. No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that. It's like if I don't carry enough insurance and my car kills somebody, I go bankrupt. I lose my house. I lose everything if I don't have enough insurance.
See, you just
people don't have enough insurance. They lose their company. They lose everything. That's it.
Mm-hmm. No.
See, now they're talking about bailout.
Yeah.
Bailout for whom? Bailout for the citizens who had that plant in their community and didn't ask questions about it.
Bailout.
There's no regulation, you know, because this is Texas.
You just you get a bailout from the nice people into whose pockets you've been shoveling money for the last 30 years. That's what you do it for.
Yeah.
So Enron was the object lesson of the last century.
I don't want to sound unsympathetic to someone living in West Texas whose house is blown up by this company.
I don't either, but I would like them to take out their soul and take a close look at it and say, you know what? You know what blew your house off the face of the earth? Unregulated capitalism destroyed your life.
Yep.
Maybe the next time someone comes waddling through your town talking about big government and those bachelors in Washington, we need less regulation. Maybe you'll slap the fuck out of them instead of giving them your vote.
There you go. Talk to me about this Doctor Who news you found. Let's
Oh, I heard some that. Doctor
oh,
Who.
Oh, my gosh.
Speaking of science fiction.
Speaking of science fiction, Doctor Who.
Well, one piece of news, one piece of idle theocratic speculation.
Oh.
The actual news is that apparently Steve Moffat, the guy who recreated Doctor Who, will soon be revealing the Doctor's name.
Mm.
Which, as you know...
Is Rumpelstiltskin.
It's Rumpelstiltskin. Yes, it is. Damn it. How did you know?
I knew it all along.
Yeah, that's the unrevealed secret of the entire series is nobody knows who his name is or where he's really from, all those stories. And there's a whole subplot about how there's this one secret that must never be answered, one question that never be answered, or the universe will be destroyed. And you assume that's his name. That's his proper name. Mm-hmm. And then a gentleman over at the Tablet magazine, a magazine of Jewish arts and culture, has some fun with speculating that the Doctor is in fact Jewish, or is in fact not in fact, but that his story is based on
Old Testament
legend.
Yeah,
that he makes a good case. I'm not saying it's true or not. I'm saying it's this is what gets you into a fist fight in a con suite at a science fiction convention at 2 a.m.
Yeah,
is you have a guy, his homeland has been wiped out. He's been wandering the universe. He fights. He's completely secular. He's surrounded by enemies all the time. He fights with cleverness and guile, and he does it with an incredibly good sense of humor. He values intelligence and compassion, blah 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 blah, which all makes good sense. But it also fits nicely into 20 other myths.
I was going to say, it reminds me of the Harvard Lampoon Big Book of College Life with the major themes that can't miss English class. Themes yeah. so all-encompassing they cannot possibly be unrelated to any given work of fiction. These include the journey, good yes. versus evil.
Yes. Well, and clearly this guy doesn't understand that Doctor Who is Irish. That's
or,
so
or ADHD or Asperger's or something. Yeah, yeah, something, something.
And he's trying to overcome...
I see it everywhere I go.
He's trying to overcome 700 years of British oppression. Yeah, and he rides a Blarney Stone.
We're British, let's face it.
Exactly. See, now you're getting it. So, but this is...
I do think the best Doctor Who scene, not to start pushing spoilers.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be careful what I say here, but the best Doctor Who scene ever, as far as I'm concerned, was when the Daleks start yelling, Doctor Who, Doctor Who.
Yes.
Doctor
Who.
That's just a great, great scene.
Part of the pleasure in reading science fiction and enjoying it as a genre was the fact that so many people just thought of it as trash.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there reading incredibly good. And there's a science fiction law, Sturgeon's law, I think. I'm sure I'm messing it up with another law, but it's 90% of everything is crap.
Yep.
Science fiction, plays, literature, art, 90% of everything is garbage, but 10% is good. And I really thoroughly enjoyed reading that 10 or 20% of science fiction that was really wonderful, well-written, thoughtful, thought-provoking. And I like good writing. I mean, anybody who listens to the show or reads my blog knows I really enjoy good writing wherever I find it. And Doctor Who is a really well-written show. Mm-hmm. It's smart and it's complicated and it's fun and it's has all the intricate novelistic themes that I enjoy when I'm reading. It tantalizes. It kills people that you don't think should be killed, as novels will. And it's just it's been a pleasure to watch them relaunch it. And so whatever the deal is, I've been able to watch those episodes all my life for free.
And there are all those smart girls out there who knit, who like
yes,
Doctor Who.
Yes.
And you like girls like that.
I'm trying to raise girls like that too.
You are raising one particular girl. And by the way, someone asked me on Twitter if my Twitter account had been taken over by my son. Actually, it's my daughter. And I did disconnect my YouTube account and my Twitter account because she's watching every single Minecraft video on YouTube.
Yes.
And liking all of them.
To learn
from
how.
From my account. Well, she's also made one. So that's very exciting. She's actually made a YouTube on.
And she has TARDIS socks.
TARDIS socks that I knit for her.
Hand knit TARDIS socks.
Yep.
And Doctor Who shirt. And it's a great pleasure to watch the corruption of the next generation.
It is.
At my hands.
Victory is yours.
The victory is mine. The future is assured.
Speaking of future, I found out this morning from Esquire.com that Ender's Game comes out in November as a movie starring Harrison Ford phoning it in.
Oh,
it really looks like he's phoning it in.
Ender, it's a game and you're part of it. Wow.
Wow, that's great there, Harrison. Wow.
They couldn't get Christopher Walken, I guess. So.
No, like, still, emote. If he could only emote more.
Christopher Walken in Ender's Game would be awesome.
It would be. It would be.
Because if only because...
This has the guy who's in Iron Man 3 as the villain. What's his name? Sir
Ben Kingsley?
Ben Kingsley is in this one with a tattooed face.
Uh-huh.
As the villain.
We know that's been stolen from The Star Is My Destination.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm sure we'll be going to see that anyway. One of us will have to take the son to see that.
If only for the obligatory Christopher Walken speech that he now has in every movie.
Who does?
There has to be like a 5 to 10 minute speech that Christopher Walken gives in every movie he now does that I look forward to. I can shed the entire movie and just watch the Christopher Walken speeches because they're so Walken-esque, I guess is the only word for it.
But Christopher Walken isn't in Ender's Game, Dirk.
I know, but he should be. I'm saying, in the perfect universe, I get what I want, and Mark Sanford is crying and his eyes out and drinking away his painful loss with his mistress. In that universe, Christopher Walken is in Ender's Game.
Okay.
And in that universe, they're making Rendezvous with Rama with all my favorite actors.
With all your favorite actors. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Hephaestus, the god of fire, especially the blacksmith's fire. And Hephaestus deems to open one eye for the photograph. So that was nice of him.
Hello.
You can send in your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. And we do love hearing from you. With or without a contribution, do write to us. And be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
And Hephaestus is the daughter of whom, Blue Gal?
Hephaestus is the god of fire, especially blacksmith's fire, and is the daughter of Zeus and Hera.
And I thought that was incredibly appropriate because I did a post earlier this week called Kronos is Disappointed with His Crappy Children about David Brooks and the people who are like David Brooks being deeply, deeply disappointed with the Republicans that they spawned.
Yeah, yeah.
And they look at that which they've created and want to swear they had nothing to do with it, swear that they didn't intend it, swear these aren't my kids, these aren't my bastards.
Yes, they are.
And yes, they are. You built this, baby. You built it. You get to live in it. Now, we have to live in it with you, but the least we can do is not let you get away with pretending that you had nothing to do with creating the monstrosity that's wrecking this country.
Because
anyway.
You did.
Because you did.
So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties lost a fortune on Fear the Kitten in the Derby and won it all back on Mark Sanford because inbred hicks are more predictable than purebred horses.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast. And now we move on to...
Stumping Chumps.
I always think we just call it Duping Driftglass.
Duping Driftglass is good. I've gotten a lot of good suggestions. One that just came in that I like a lot is the 9 billion names of pod, which is a riff on an Arthur Clarke story called The 9 billion Names of God,
yeah,
which I think we talked about. So... keep those cards and letters coming. There's some really good suggestions in there. You people are very clever.
Yes.
And, you make me laugh.
Maybe we should just post them all to our Facebook page. Let people read them.
We have a Facebook page?
We have a Facebook page, people.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we have over 1,000 likes on Facebook. Isn't that
nice? I am the last person to know anything.
Well, and we have a lot of great people over on our Facebook
page. Yeah, oh, I know. I know.
And by the way, our goal has always been to have 1% of you donate. We are almost there. We are like at 0.98% of our listeners.
You are the 1%.
Donating 1% regularly to our podcast, either with one-time donations or with subscriptions. So
that's really,
thank you very much.
I'm still amazed.
I know.
I know.
And we pay our electric bill and part of our cable bill with that every month. So thank you very, very much for that. Okay.
All right.
Duping Driftglass. And this is from our friend Kevin. And it's more of a philosophical question. Kevin Holtzinger.
Hello, Kevin.
Yeah, he's our friend on Facebook, and he said we can use his last name. So
he hangs around here a lot.
A lot, right.
Like him.
And he has a philosophical question. It's not a stump question.
Oh, good. There's no wrong answer then. I love those.
There's no wrong answer. And there's a lot of it's a long question, but I think it's worth talking about.
All right.
What Kevin would like to ask us is this, and I know you don't think that Star Wars is science fiction.
It's not me who doesn't think of Blue Gal. It's the laws of science fiction.
Thank you. We're going to talk about Star Wars anyway.
All right.
Is Luke Skywalker a slave owner?
Yes.
Well, let Kevin go on.
Yes, okay.
C-3PO and R2-D2 are portrayed as having artificial intelligence equal to, if not greater than, human intelligence. In Star Wars A New Hope, the droids are sold to Luke's uncle by Jawas as if they were common machines. And in Star Wars Return of the Jedi, the droids are handed over to Jabba the Hutt by Luke as if they were, again, common machines. I always think of, the vacuum cleaner. You know, it's as if they're giving them a vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
Now, I imagine that Driftglass has seen numerous discussions in science fiction about artificial intelligence and when exactly a machine should be treated as a person. And then there's the whole Turing test as well.
Right.
My question is, what would other science fiction writers say about C-3PO and R2-D2? Are the droids simple-minded enough that they should be treated as property? Or are they intelligent enough that they should be treated as people? And Tatooine is just pulling a Mississippi on a slippery issue like that. And I added to that when I wrote back and thanked Kevin for his letter. The fact that they sort of treated each other as slaves do in fiction.
Uh-huh.
C-3PO is clearly a house slave.
Yes.
And there are field hands among the Jawas when you're looking at the Jawas lining up droids to be sold. Luke's uncle is a farmer and he's looking for a farm hand. Mm-hmm. He has no use for C-3PO. He doesn't need a droid to translate for him. He needs somebody to get out into the field.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fascinating. And C-3PO, you know, feels superior to the other droids because he has programming that gives him language and translation abilities, and his job is not to be in the field. So anyway, that's just my thought. But what would other science fiction writers say about C-3PO and R2-D2 as to whether or not they are slaves or should be treated as people? Or go in any other direction you want with this.
Well, this is the oldest question in science fiction.
Hmm.
I would argue it's Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Once
you've created life, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
What are your responsibilities? Yeah. What power do you have over it? Life will do what life wants to do. And whether it's made of silicon or made out of carbon, it doesn't really matter. Whether it's software or hardware, it doesn't really matter. The whole question, one of the big, and this is, you know, it's again, these questions hide in pulp paperback covers, behind pulp covers of bugs holding blonde women. But one of the big questions that all authors wrestle with, especially in this genre, is what does it mean to be human? What does it mean? What is the definition of a human being? One of the core questions of Star Trek was, who gets to be in the Federation? Who gets to be considered human? What gets to be considered intelligent? Because once you've passed a certain threshold, you don't get to just kill people off involuntarily. Mm-hmm. Now, that was sort of the creatures you encounter out there, who have their own culture, presumably, and their own habits, and their own methods of reproduction. But when you build that creature, when you build a Cylon, and you've made it a servant, and it rises up against you, it's not a carbon-based life form anymore. It's not a person. A slave is genetically related to you, but something you built in a garage isn't human. By definition, it isn't human. If you define human being as a carbon-based life form that reproduces in a certain way, but it could very well be intelligent and sentient. So the question of who gets to be in the club and what rights and privileges appertain thereto is one of the big central questions of science fiction. Also, the differentiation in slavery. The United States practiced chattel slavery, intergenerational slavery. If you were black, you were slave, period, forever and ever, damned by the mark of Cain, perpetually inferior because God said so.
No matter how much white you had in your bloodstream,
right.
Yeah, you had that mark, right?
But in other cultures, you could buy your way out of slavery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
With money. I mean, in a slave culture, I believe I have this right, one of the first Roman millionaires, one of the first Roman bankers was a former slave.
Yes, he was.
Yep. He bought his way out of slavery and went into business with his former master. There's lots of gradations of servitude and slavery that are lost on people whose understanding of slavery is strictly U.S. Bondage chattel slavery.
Well, and one of the things that's really important to understand, too, about United States history is how so many Irish got over here was by being indentured servants on the boat. And they traded 6 years of their lives for passage to the New World. And then they were a servant. And lots of people did not have money in Europe.
Yeah.
How did all these people get over to
they
the
sold
New
themselves
World?
Into
they
slavery.
Sold themselves into temporary slavery and
exactly.
had a contract. I'll work. And you look at the newspapers of Ben Franklin's time and escaping indentured servitude, they could track you down. It was just like slavery. They
you ship you off to Australia
or where or whatever. Yeah, you were bound by the law to fulfill your contract. So, well,
as is true with the military, I mean, if you go into the military, wherever you stand on the Bradley Manning issue, once you sign the contract, the government owns you.
Yeah. Yep.
And you don't get to do certain things that civilians do.
Yep.
And that's what you signed and agreed to before you went in. You're trading X amount of years of your life away in exchange for
certain things that we should be much more careful about making sure we keep our side of the bargain. I think that's what Rachel Maddow's been really pushing.
But. And that's not to say that lots of people don't go to the military because of honor and love of country or anything else. But at the end of the day, you sign a contract and you make a bargain with the government.
And some people do very well with that bargain and others don't.
But people, you know, people have been selling themselves in and out of slavery or renting themselves or whatever. There's a wonderful short story called The Day the Icicle Works Closed that I've riffed on before about when the communication corporation that owns a planet artificially destroys its manufacturing base
in order to
impoverish everyone and turn them into slaves. And they literally rent their bodies. They're sort of downloaded out of their bodies and other people upload them to use them as vehicles to have fun in. And they return them slightly used and somewhat damaged after they're done. But the whole idea of renting yourself of where does, you know, prostitution begin and end versus sexual surrogacy begin and end are all interesting questions. See, this is over in the better universe. These are the sorts of conversations people are having. They're not talking about fucking Benghazi.
Yeah.
They're talking about really genuinely interesting moral issues that people can really disagree about and talk about and try to reach some sort of consensus around or at least agree to disagree. But the short answer is, Luke's a slaveholder. And he doesn't understand why that's a bad thing at the beginning of the story. By the end of the story, he's provisionally accepted these two droids as part of his family. They've been elevated, but I don't think at the end he would consider 10 other droids who came off the assembly line anything other than wrenches or vacuum cleaners. He's going personally attached, you know, because you know what? C-3PO and R2-D2, they're one of the good ones.
On that note, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye, baby.